ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter number 29, Text number 60, 4.29.60. Narada Vacha,
Narada Vacha,
Yene Bharavade
Karma, create another situation for the living entity to enjoy or suffer in the next gross body. Thus, the subtle body continues, whereas the gross bodies change one after another. Since modern scientists and philosophers are too materialistic, and since their knowledge is taken away by the illusory energy, they cannot explain how the gross body is changing. The materialistic philosopher Darwin has tried to study the change of the gross body, but because he had no knowledge of either the subtle body or the soul, he could not clearly explain how the evolutionary process is going on. One may change the gross body, but he wakes in the subtle body. People cannot understand the activities of the subtle body, and consequently, they are bewildered as to how the actions of one gross body affect another gross body. The activities of the subtle body are also guided by the super soul, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text number 15. Tarvasya chaham hirde sannavisto matha smritri jnanam abhavanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a super soul, is always guiding the individual soul always knows how to act according to the reactions of his past karma. This is probably the punchline. Let's read that again. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a super soul, is always guiding the individual soul always knows how to act according to the reactions of his past karma. In other words, the super soul reminds him to act in such a way. Therefore, although there is apparently a change in the gross body, there is a continuation between the lives of an individual soul. Om Jnanati Vinandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Sanyavadi Pashyatya Desatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, in this particular translation, verse, and also in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains the transmigration of the soul, which most of us are quite familiar with, that there is a gross body and there is a soft and there is a subtle body. The gross body is made up of air, water, fire, air, and ether, and the subtle body is made up of mind, intelligence, and false ego. Bhumi rapo navavayo kham manu buddhi nevacha ahankara iti ame vinna prakriti astara. There are 8 elements in our in the body. So Srila explains about that. There are 5. Like there are 5 hardware and there are 3 subtle software that makes this computer function. The software being mind, intelligence, and false ego, and the hardware being air, water, fire, air, and ether. So then Srila Prabhupada explains that the gross body, of course, changes. Dehino explains yata dehe, kaumaram yavanam jara, tatha dehantara praptir, dhirastatranam vetan. Krishna explains that. So the gross body always changes. And at the end of life, what happens? The subtle body, which is mind, intelligence, and false ego, accompanies the soul and then goes and takes another body. So the gross body is cremated or whatever, and then the subtle body accompanies the jiva and goes and takes another body. And that's the process of transmigration. Then, Srila Prabhupada also gave us this example elsewhere, that if we are sitting and then we are smelling rose fragrance and there is a rose garden nearby, so we can smell the fragrance, but the rose is not coming to us, neither are we going to the rose. The rose is in the garden, we are sitting outside somewhere in the courtyard, but you can smell the fragrance of the rose. How are we able to smell the fragrance of the rose when the rose is not moving, neither we are moving? It's because the aroma is wafted in the air by the wind. So just as the wind carries the aroma of the rose to us, similarly, the subtle body, which is mind, intelligence, and false ego, together with the jiva, carries the jiva to the another body appropriate to his past karma. And then Prabhupada explains in the next life, the jiva knows what to do based on his past karma, because the super soul reminds him. That's very interesting. The super soul, which always accompanies the jiva, in the next life reminds the jiva, how to act, in other words, how to credit and debit his bank balance of karma, because the Paramatma is reminding him. The Paramatma reminds him what to do. So, the elements of the gross body and the subtle body, you know, relatively, you know, straightforward and simple for devotees, because we have heard this many times. So I wanted to take this, you know, this thread of understanding, you know, the body dies, of course, you know, and the soul doesn't die. Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita quite explicitly. But this concept of trying to save life, and you know, I just want to go a little bit deeper on it. Especially at the present time, we see, you know, with the global pandemic, you know, there is all this news and statistics about how many people have lost their lives and how many people, you know, how many people's lives have been saved. Daily statistics. Definitely, you know, it is saddening to see the phenomena. And hats off to the frontline workers, you know, who are so dedicatedly working, you know, in making a world a better place for us from a material point of view. But there's just so many statistics. But one thing that was interesting that caught my eye was the concept of saving lives. You know, so actually, if we analyze it from our devotional lens, the definition of saving lives, actually from a material point of view, actually means what? It means nothing but delaying death. The concept of saving life from a material point of view is nothing but actually delaying death. Because that is for certain. Krishna tells us that for the body there is no endurance, and for the soul there is no death. So the body will die, undoubtedly. Nobody here disputes that the body will not die. So actually, when we say we have saved the life, what it means is, you know, we perhaps have saved the life, and the death has not occurred from coronavirus or from some other virus or from some accident or from some other illness. That may have been managed, but the body will eventually die. So from a material lens, the point I'm making is death is defined by them, you know, as a means of delaying death, possibly delaying death. Because actually, again, we know from Shastra point of view that death will also come whenever it's destined. So actually, in one sense, there is no delaying death from a devotional point of view as well. No, it will happen when it will happen. But at least from their lens, it is, we have saved some life. So that's their concept. Now, when we see from our devotional lens, for us, saving life means what? Saving life means not only perhaps delaying death, because in one sense we cannot delay death, it will come when it comes. But still we do our part of keeping the body and the soul together, keeping the body healthy, so that we can, you know, utilize this body in the service of the Lord. So therefore, you know, we do our exercise, we eat healthy, you know, we sleep on time, you know, we wake up on time. We do all those to keep the body healthy. So devotees make that effort, just as the materialist will also make the effort to save the life, not to save the body. But we go one step further, and by saving life, our definition therefore becomes that we don't want the jiva to take another birth. So actually, for us, saving life means not to be reborn again. No? For billions and billions of lifetime, we have made this mistake of not remembering Krishna at the time of death. So as one of my friends was telling me, no, for the devotees, the fear is not whether we will die or not. No? Our biggest fear is, when we die this time, will we be able to remember Krishna? No, that's our fear. Because that will decide whether we take another birth or not. Yeah? So from a devotee's point of view, saving life actually means saving the jiva from taking repeated birth and death again in the future. And hopefully that this death is the last death. You know? And then we are not born again. Punarjanvani navidyate. We go back to Krishna and don't come back into this material world. You know? So that's the difference. Now, so we can see, in any case, even from the material point of view or from a devotional point of view, spiritual point of view, the attempt to save life is there. That similarity is there. We want to save the life, and we don't want people to die, put it this way. No? Nobody wants their loved ones to die, or for anybody to die for that matter. But we also see that there are people out there who are ready to kill. We definitely have heard of, you know, notorious murderers. No? They go and kill people for whatever reasons. No? For robbery or something gone wrong. You know, people kill people. So as much as we can see that the majority of the population, you know, will be working on the platform of saving a life, there are some criminals out there, demoniac people out there who actually also end up killing another person, which is really quite ghastly. Now, in that category, when we can see people killing people, again, majority will not be taking the action of taking the life of somebody that is close to them. Majority will not. Generally, they will shoot somebody on the street, or somebody has got really nuts in their heads, and then they will go and kill people in the school and all that. That thing will happen. But most of the time, people will try to preserve and protect their families, their loved ones, their friends and all that. That will be there. So even in the minority which go and kill people, even then the majority will not kill, their own kin and kin. They will generally be people that they are strangers to. But having said that, there is again, so if you look at this from zooming down in from the majority to the minority, there is still those rascals out there who will take the life of their close ones, to their near and dear ones. There are also people out there. Now, one classic example of that, and this is where I want to focus today. One classic example of somebody attempting to take the life of their own child by so many means. One classic example of somebody trying to take the life of their own child by so many means is Hiranyakashipu. Amongst all those people, and I'll recap. The whole purport here is about changing of the body. The subtle body doesn't change, and the jiva, of course, we know is always eternal. And then we go from one life to the other. Now there are some people who also, majority will not want people to die, but some will kill people. In that minority, there will be some rascals who will try to take the life of their own child. And one of those such demon is Hiranyakashipu. So then the question that comes to mind is, If our loved ones are so we are so attached to them, then what propels such people to actually take this heinous action of taking the life of somebody that's so close to them, especially in this case when the person is their child? What propels them? So to understand that, philosophy tells us three things. There are three types of wills. One is God's will, the other is free will, and the third is evil. What's the difference? God's will, free will, and evil. E-V-I-L. So God's will, nothing happens without the sanction of the Lord. We know that. Okay, so that's there. Now, when the free will is given to the jiva, which is our minute independence, if our free will is in congruence, is in align with the will of the Lord, that action becomes devotional service. That's a devotee mentality. When our free will is aligned with the will of the Lord, that is called a devotee platform. And that's why we say that. When we say that for a pure devotee, there is oneness with the Supreme. What does that mean? That means that his desire and the desire of the Lord are the same. So therefore the free will has been, in other words, surrender means what? Surrender means that, oh my Lord, I'm surrendering my free will to your will. That's what it means. Surrender means I'm surrendering my free will to your will. And we see this in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna at the beginning wanted to do things according to his will, that I don't want to fight, because these are my loved ones. He also had this problem. The people that he had to kill were his near and dear ones. Except that, they were demoniac in nature as well. So Krishna didn't want to take that fight. But at the end of Bhagavad Gita in chapter 16, when Krishna says, and Krishna respects jiva's independence at all times and place and circumstances, Krishna always respects that. So after giving in the whole Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 16, Krishna tells Arjuna, I have given you the entire philosophy. I've answered all your questions. Two things he says. One, if something is still unclear, I'm happy to repeat. And thank God Arjuna didn't say that it's unclear. Because otherwise Otherwise, we would have another 16 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, you know, and twice the length to complete our Bhakti Shastri and so on and so forth. So as it is, you know, sometimes it's hard to complete 16 chapters, 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Imagine having, you know, 36 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, more emotional service. So anyway, jokes aside, Arjuna said, I have understood this. So Krishna is a brilliant teacher. Ask his students, have you understood this? I am happy to repeat. Arjuna said, no, it's all clear. But what is interesting, what does Arjuna say at that point in time? Actually, no, even before that, Krishna says to Arjuna, then second point is that, now you, if you have understood what I have said, now you deliberate upon what I have said and then you do accordingly. You deliberate on what I have said and do as you desire. So there, the Lord shows us that He respects the jiva's independence, the free will. And then in return, what does Arjuna say? Arjuna says that, oh my Lord, I am going to do what is your will. No? And your will and your desire is for me to take up my kshatriya duty, actually more than that, to do devotional service, because it's your instructions for me to fight and therefore I will fight. So what is happening there? Krishna respects the jiva's individuality and jiva's independence and jiva's free will. And Arjuna's free will is now surrendered to Krishna's will. And therefore there is congruence, there is alignment. Now, conversely, when the jiva's will, free will, is not aligned to Lord's will, there is a demoniac nature. That means we are not surrendered. That means there is a misuse of our free will. So there is a proper use of our free will, which makes us devotee, and there is an improper or misuse of our free will, which is against the Lord's will, and that starts, we start inculcating demoniac mentality. So going forward, whether we are divine in nature or demoniac in nature, it's not so much upon how we look. In the past, those who were demoniac were perhaps more explicitly recognizable because they will have many heads and horns and different kind of teeth and wearing skulls and ashes, whatever. Now you can know this is a demoniac person. Now in Kali Yuga, you will not find people who have got horns in their head, and then big teeth and five heads on the streets of Melbourne. You will not find them. So actually, whether we are divine or demoniac is not so much on a bodily appearance, but it is a state of mind. Whether we are divine or demoniac is a state of mind. And this Krishna tells us very, very elaborately in chapter 16 of Bhagavad Gita, the divine and demoniac nature. There he says, it's the state of mind. So, back to the question, don't forget the question. Our question for the day is, what propels a jiva to go and kill another person, especially if that person is his own child, as is the case of Hiranyakashipu. That's what we are trying to unravel today. Yeah? So, first thing to note, therefore, is the divine and demoniac nature. That comes from misuse of our independence. Now, when we misuse our independence repeatedly, through a severe accumulation of the misuse of independence, through a severe accumulation of misuse of our free will, our demoniac mentality increases and increases and increases. Just as with the severe accumulation of our proper use of our free will, our divine mentality increases and increases and increases and increases. As an example, when we see snow on the mountain, and very soon we will, because we are getting into winter. When there is a flake of snow on the mountain top, what is the harm in a flake of snow? What harm can it do us? A flake of snow on the top of the mountain, what harm can it do us? Zero. Agree? Not much, it's just a flake of snow. So that's harmless. But that flake of snow, when it rolls from the mountain and gathers another flake of snow and another flake of snow and another flake of snow, very soon it's rolling up the top of the mountain and coming towards the bottom of the mountain. Then it starts gathering momentum and force and heaviness and quantity. Then it becomes little bigger. It becomes as bigger as, let's say a small rock. What harm did it do us? Possibly not much still. Unless you pick it up and throw it on somebody. If it is solidified enough, it might hurt him, but still perhaps not much. But eventually we know what happens. That flake of snow which was harmless at the top of the mountain, when it gathered, when it rolled and gathered more and more snowflakes, very soon it can become a snow avalanche. Now, snow avalanche means, you know, big, massive snow that is falling from the mountain and it comes crashing to the ground. Now, if we therefore happen to be fall in the path of that snow avalanche, it can destroy us, it can kill us. People have been killed of this. Now, it can destroy a house, it can destroy landscape at the bottom of the mountain, and that's the way. Now, what has happened here? That snowflake that was harmless is now has gathered momentum and so much of force and power that it can kill something, it can destroy something on its path. So similarly, you know, we have that free will and we come with the divine quality. And we also, you know, unfortunately also have got demoniac mentality in us, or at least for myself I can say. Then if we don't control that demoniac mentality that is there in the heart, if we let it loose, excuse me, then gradually what will happen is that demoniac mentality gathers force, it will become like a demoniac snow avalanche, if you like. And then it can kill whatever comes in its path. So this is why, you know, if you see, actually if you see the pastime of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj, both of their activity is incomprehensible. Both of their activity is incomprehensible. Even Prahlad Maharaj's activity is incomprehensible to us. Why? Let's look at Prahlad Maharaj first, then we look at Hiranyakashipu, devotees first, then demons. Yeah. Why is Prahlad Maharaj's activity incomprehensible? Prahlad Maharaj, you know, through gradual accumulation of his divine nature, that snowflake, which has now become, you know, a snow avalanche, which is a positive snow avalanche, let's say, you know, has intensified his bhakti so much. But where is he performing his bhakti? Even before that, before where he is performing his bhakti, let's put ourselves, we are all sadhakas, we try to do devotional service. And time to time, you know, we get sufferings in our life. Some anxiety, some frustration, you know, some problems, health problems, family problems, financial problems, job problems, something or the other. Some problem keeps coming in our life. And then when we are really devastated, you know, when we are really down, then, you know, putting on our head on our head, and we say, why is this happening to me? After all, I'm performing devotional service. Why are bad things happening to good people? Why are bad things happening to good people? We have heard that many times. But when bad things happen to good people, that's when we start thinking, you know, does philosophy really make sense? You know, when it happens to us, or when it happens to somebody close to us, when bad things happen to good people, we start actually questioning again, why is it happening? And you know, we are doing devotional service and still all this is happening. So we start questioning, you know, we start feeling little low on ourselves and all that. So, and we know that we have done, you know, let's say sinful activities, forget our past lives, even in this life. You know, it's hard to find somebody who can put the hand on the heart to say, I've been sinless in this life. So knowing that we have done something wrong in our present life, and still we lament and question, why is this bad thing happening to me, and how is it happening to me when I'm doing devotional service? Therefore, it makes Prahlad Maharaj's devotional service really incomprehensible and incredible. Why? Because he has got no sin in this life. Prahlad has done no sin in this life. And on top of that, he is only doing devotional service and intensifying devotional service and by the time of the age of 5 years, he's become a pure devotee. Now he can sit down and question, why is this bad thing happening to me? Why is amongst everybody else my own father is killing me? I am chanting, you know, Krishna's holy name every day, and my own father is hell bent on killing me. He can question, but he doesn't. Why? Because he doesn't see Hiranyakashipu as his enemy. That's another subject matter. Why he doesn't face? Because he doesn't see him as an enemy. A Paramahamsa sees no enemies. So Prahlad Maharaj is a Paramahamsa, so he doesn't see even Hiranyakashipu as his enemy. He sees everybody connected with Krishna. And when we see everything connected with Krishna, then we see Krishna only. So even in Hiranyakashipu, you know, he is seeing something positive, that this is part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, he is not envious. Yeah? So, coming back to the point. Prahlad Maharaj's devotional service is incredible because he is doing devotional service, you know, in times and circumstances which is really, really, really challenging for him. I mean, people are killing him for doing devotional service. And he continues. at a certain, you know, young age. So through this pastime, we learn that bhakti is not dependent on age. Bhakti is not dependent on age. Bhakti is not dependent on anything material at all. Bhakti is not dependent on anything material. Whether we have age, whether we are young, whether we are old. Paramparas teaches us that we can continue to do devotional service. If Vibhishan in Ramayana could do devotional service when he had a demoniac brother, if Bali could do devotional service and become a pure devotee, although he had a demoniac guru, if Dhruva could do devotional service and become a pure devotee when his mother was a bad mother, Vibhishan did become a pure. Vibhishan became pure devotee, he had a bad brother. Bali Maharaj became a pure devotee, he had a bad guru. Dhruva became a pure devotee, he had a bad mother. Prahlad Maharaj became a pure devotee, he had a bad father. Sometimes we complain that our spouse is not good. Our parents are not conducive to devotional service. They are calling from India and then saying, why are you going to temple, you know? Why are you doing, you know, chanting on this? So then we come, you know, and say, oh, my father said, no, don't go to the temple. My mother said, don't go to the temple. My friends in India are, you know, making fun of me by saying, why have you, you know, shaved your head? And why is your hands always in the chanting beads? Why are you not going to the movies? Why are you not going to the pubs? And we think again, yeah, you know, their questions is quite valid. Should I be going to the pub little bit as well? Now we question like this. But here we see pastimes after pastimes after pastimes, when devotional service has been performed, no, notwithstanding such demoniac atmosphere and demoniac families. So what is our complaint now? We have to continue. Such is life. So, therefore, Prabhupada's mother's devotional service and activity answer is incomprehensible. Now, conversely, now if we see Hiranyakashipu's activity is also incomprehensible. Because as a father, he is trying to kill his own son. We don't see this happening many times. The point I was making at the beginning of the class. We see people killing people, but a father killing his own son, especially if the son is such a pure devotee, is incomprehensible. But why is this happening? It is happening because the severe accumulation of misuse of the free will. And why is this? What is that Hiranyakashipu wants? No, that he is so addicted to misusing his free will. Prahlad is addicted to Krishna. Prahlad is addicted to Krishna. Hiranyakashipu is addicted to power. That's the difference. Hiranyakashipu is addicted to power. He wants to be the most powerful in the creation. Sometimes we see this in sports people, you know, that if I'm the number 3, the next day I want to become number 2. I'm number 2, you know, in the world ranking, then I want to become number 1. Why? Because this is power again, you know, prestige, that I'm on the top of the world. We see this in the corporate ladder as well. If I'm a junior employee, then I want to become, you know, a little bit higher and higher and higher, and I want to keep scaling the ladders of the corporate, you know, achievements. So that mentality is there. Hiranyakashipu, what he has accomplished is actually everything almost to the number 2. Because even the devatas are scared of him. Given his power, when he travels, you know, the earth trembles and the demigods shake. But he is just almost, he is there. Except that, you know, there is one more person above him, which is Lord Vishnu. So he wants to overpower Vishnu. And he is doing everything possible to overpower Vishnu. That is his mentality. Now this is the demonic mentality. A free will that is not in congruence with the Lord's will. Because they can never be number, they can never be another goal. Now Krishna's place is top of the ladder is, now that part is static. Actually, maybe not. Because devotees can become bigger than him. It was in Melbourne only. When Prabhupada was, you know, he was actually in Melbourne town hall. And, you know, one gentleman got up. And he also had this, you know, addiction to power. So he asked Prabhupada, he said, Swamiji, can you make me gold? And Prabhupada gave a brilliant answer. He said, I can't make you gold, but I can make you higher than gold. I can't make you gold, but I can make you higher than gold. And then he gives the example of, you know, Yashoda Mata, Yashoda Ma, you know, and then pure devotees of the Lord. Pure devotees in Bhishma Dev, they actually, in one sense, Krishna is controlled by the pure devotees. So in one sense, you know, I can't make you God, but I can make you something bigger than God. In other words, become a pure devotee, you will forget about becoming a God. But no, such a brilliant concept, depending on the time of presence and consciousness. So anyway, so here we can see that Hiranyakashipu is addicted to power. he wants to become number one. And if his own child is not helping him in the course to become the number one, then he's ready to kill him. This is the accumulation of demoniac mentality. Now, I'll talk about power as well, because this is what Hiranyakashipu wants, power, yeah? Power is... Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad Maharaj, no, that, yeah, I'm trying to kill you, no? I'm making all these arrangements to get you, you know, of this kingdom, of this planet, because you are a nuisance in my endeavor to become the number one. But tell me, what is the source of your power? Because I want to become the most powerful. Tell me, what is the source of your power? Now, Prahlad Maharaj gives an answer that on the face of it, no, might seem little provocative, little foolish, it might seem, to a layman. Because what is the answer he gives? He gives the answer that, oh my dear father, the source of my power, because of which you are failing to kill me, is the same source from which you are getting your power. The source of my power, which is Lord Vishnu, is the same source from which where you are getting your power. Now this is like, you know, flagging, you know, a red, you know, waving a red flag, you know, to a raging bull. Because you don't want to provocate people. So this, to, of course, Prahlad would know that this will infuriate Hiranyakashipu more, because he wants to get rid of Lord Vishnu in the first place. So, why does Prahlad Maharaj give this answer? He gives this answer because I said two reasons. One, he doesn't see Hiranyakashipu, you know, as an enemy. And more importantly, Prahlad Maharaj is speaking the truth to educate his father. Because he knows that his father is misusing his free will, and he wants to educate him, and a devotee always preaches. So a devotee always preaches. He's preaching to his father to say, forget about, you know, getting the ambition of becoming the most powerful, because that is not possible. Know that the source of your power is the same source from which I'm getting my power. You know? So just surrender unto him. Now, another thing is very interesting in this pastime. That although Prahlad Maharaj acknowledges and preaches to his father that the source of the power is same, which is Vishnu, if you look at actually the power of Prahlad Maharaj in one sense, you know, in physical sense, it's nothing there. And I'll bring out the point by a contrast. You look at the power of Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Arjuna has got he's the supreme archer. Nobody can match him. No, there is his power. There is the power that Krishna has given to Arjuna, and Arjuna is a pure devotee of the Lord, to say, no, with this power, you go and execute your devotional service. No, you can. So if somebody is, you know, shooting an arrow to Arjuna, or somebody is trying to kill Arjuna, or somebody is trying to pull Arjuna into a pot of boiling oil, or somebody is throwing Arjuna from the top of the mountain, Arjuna would defend himself because he was powerful. But Arjuna acknowledges that my power is also coming from Krishna. So much so that when Krishna, you know, wound up his pastime and went back to, you know, his dham, Arjuna is incapable of actually fighting off with some, you know, minor cowherd men when he is coming back from Dwarka to Hastinapur. And there Arjuna realizes that so far I've been able to be victorious and defeat, you know, mighty enemies is because Krishna empowered me. So lessons we learn is that our source of power, whether, you know, it is to cook nicely or to sing nicely, you know, or to give nice lectures, or to, you know, be the best in the book distribution, whatever it might be, is nothing, Prabhupada says, but it is borrowed plumes. These are nothing but borrowed plumes. In other words, you know, we have just borrowed this power from Krishna. Or in other words, Krishna has just empowered us to that particular degree so that we can go and perform our devotional service. When it is not required, Krishna will take it back. Because power is not a requirement for us to go back to Godhead. Because back to Godhead, we don't need powers. There is no demons there to fight. There is no Maya Devi there to fight. So actually, it's not even a requirement. So Krishna shows us through the pastime of Arjuna that he can give us as much power as he wants and is necessary and appropriate for us to perform our devotional service. And conversely, in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, he also demonstrates that I might give you no power. You know? If somebody throws you from the mountain, you won't be able to defend yourself. If somebody puts you in a pot of boiling oil, you won't be able to do anything from you. If somebody puts you, and gets you to embrace fire, you will not be able to do anything. But notwithstanding, you will not have any physical power to defend yourself. If you have faith in me, you'll be protected. So the point is, to perform devotional service, we can have all the power like Arjuna and use it for Krishna service. And we can have no power in one sense, physical power like Prahlad Maharaj, and still be dedicated to Krishna, being surrounded by demonic people. So power, so therefore there is no reason at any point of us, at any point in time for us to become proud, is the point. Because if we become proud, proud generally comes when? Proud comes when we have done something very nicely. We think, I just nailed it. That day I just nailed it. And this is, even in devotional service, that false prestige that sometimes we look for is coming because we have done something wonderful that others might not have been able to do. But then we have to quickly remember that it is nothing but something that Krishna has given us, and it can be taken back as well. And Prabhupada also showed us, went to America with 40 rupees, hardly anything, but Krishna made him, millionaire in a billionaire. So if required, Krishna will do whatever is required for us to perform our devotional service. Now, I'll speak on two more things and I'll finish. So far we have been talking about, because the purport talks about that the body will always die, and the whole purport is in that. The body will always die, and the soul is ever eternal. So then, I was saying at the beginning that there is all this endeavor to save lives. People don't want people to die. Our frontline workers during the current pandemic are doing a wonderful job, to the best of abilities to do that. And that's just the human nature to save life. But there's a difference between saving lives for materialists and for devotees. For us, saving life means not only delaying death, but also saving the jiva from taking another birth. So the difference in the definition and in our attempt. We don't want jiva to take another birth. We don't want to take another birth ourselves. If we can do that, then actually we have saved a life. So then we spoke about the cases when generally people don't want to kill people, but then we have got this a classic example of a father trying to kill his own child. And then example is of Hiranyakashipu trying to kill his own devoted child. And then the question was, why does he do that? And then we discussed that it is a accumulation of misuse of the free will that creates the demoniac nature. And then when demoniac nature erupts us, it can take any form, to the form of even killing your own family. And that is really, really ghastly. So that's where we are. And then because of that thread, we started talking a little bit about the powers that were given to Hiranyakashipu for the power that he had accumulated, and he was aspiring for, as contrast to the power that was given to Prahlad Maharaj, which was actually no power in one sense, but all the power in another sense, for them to do his devotional service. And then, because I've taken the thread, I just want to add two more points about Lord Narasimha Dev. We know that Narasimha Dev appeared from the pillar, and Prahlad said that Vishnu is also in this pillar. So we see that Hiranyakashipu, Narasimha Dev, upholds the words of his pure devotee. And we see this again and again and again in our scriptures, that the Lord never lets the words of his devotees fail. And that's why for us there is also faith, that Prabhupada said, but you do your 16 rounds, and do your at least 16 rounds, and follow four regulatory principles, and we will go back to Godhead. So we have faith in those words, because Srila Prabhupada has said it, so Krishna has to fulfill. But if we do it sincerely, then we have hope that even if we don't become pure, Krishna might give us some stimulus package in our current crisis. So the Lord appears as Narasimha Dev. Narasimha Dev is half man, half lion, but full God. Narasimha Dev is half man, half lion, full God. No doubts on that. Now, Narasimha Dev, his appearance is strange in one sense, because it's a strange combination of man and lion. Reminds me, when Prabhupada was in America, it was Hayak River Prabhu. Hayak River Prabhu was the university lecturer. Maybe he was the university lecturer. So when he was lecturing at the university, he's started teaching a little bit about Krishna consciousness because, you know, of course, he was coming to Srila Prabhupada. And the principal came to know. And the principal called Hari Prabhu in his room and said, I heard that you were talking about God in the class. And in America, you know, there is not much of education about God in universities. For that matter, there is no education about God in any universities, let alone in America. So he said, you are talking about God. So Hari Prabhu said, yes, I am, you know, because I didn't know that we are not supposed to talk about God. No, it's not illegal. He said, yeah, it's not illegal, you can, but you know, the God that you are explaining to the students is very strange. It's a strange God. And Hari Prabhu said, you know, what is your conception of God? So the principal said that, I don't have any conception of God. So then who said that, if you don't have any conception of God, then how can you say that my conception is strange? You can only say something is strange if you have a conception. If you don't have it, then this is not strange. He said, it's strange in the sense, you know, that you are telling, you know, the students that God is a cowboy. And in America that time, the cowboy was a big thing. No? He's saying that you are telling God that student that your God is cowboy. I said, no, he's not a cowboy, he's a cow head boy. He's a cow head boy. He goes and heads the cows, you know, in the Vrindavan. He's like that kind of cool dude, you know, young boy, you know, he's like that. And at that time, you know, the racial thing was also very big in America, the white and the, you know, the whites and the blacks. And then the principal said, and you are also telling, you know, your students that God is black? Other people said, no, God is not black, God is blue. So, now we take it for granted because we see Hrinakeshapu, you know, and our other Vandava and all that, you know, we become used to it. But if you go and tell somebody that God sleeps, you know, on the bed of snakes, people will find this strange. People will find this strange, you know, too far out. So Hrinakeshapu in one sense is actually far out, you know, half man, half lion, full God. So, and God can do that. Anadi, you know, advaitam achyutam anadi manantarupam adhyam puranam purusham navayovanam cha vede shudurlava madurlava matma bhakto govindam adi purusham maham bhajami. So it's advaitam. Advaitam. Dvaita means two, we know that, and advaita means one. So in Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma tells immediately, you know, that the Lord is one, is advaitam. Advaitam, Achyutam, Anadim, but his Anantarupam. Anantarupam. He can take many forms. And one of that forms can be Lord Narasimha Deva. So, Lord Narasimha appears, you know, to withhold, as I said, or not to withhold, to uphold, you know, the vows of many devotees in this particular case. Firstly, what are the pastimes? Firstly, when Bhakta Prahlad was born, his mother said to Narad Muni, or requested to Narad Muni, that, O dear sage, please bless the child that he is always protected. And Narad Muni said, Tathastu, that it be so. So therefore, the Lord is always now protecting Prahlad Maharaj. Second reason is that Lord Brahma had given the benediction to Hrinakeshapu only. And we know that you will not be killed in the day, in the night, by a man, by an animal, you know, in the air, in the ground, you know, all that, no, not by a weapon, not by anything else, no, you will not be killed like that. And Hrinakeshapu said that I'm now deathless. So then, you know, Narasimha Deva appears in a form to uphold the words of Lord Brahma as well. That you have given a promise, which you didn't know what you were doing, even with your protocol, you know, processes, you didn't realize that Narasimha Deva is trying to, you know, fool you, you didn't realize, and now I have to uphold your words while I appear like this. And then the third reason is that Prahlad Maharaj says that, you know, Hrinakeshapu, that, you know, Vishnu is also in this pillar. Vishnu means what? Vish means the entire creation, you know, and Anu means, you know, very small, you know, very minor particle. So Vishnu therefore means, you know, that personality that pervades even, you know, the minor particles, the atoms of the creation. So Vishnu means that personality that can pervade the entire creation. So what we speak of entire creation, Prahlad Maharaj is saying that, yeah, the Lord Vishnu is also in this pillar. And then of course, when we know the story from there, so Lord Narasimha Deva appears here. So Lord Narasimha Deva comes to uphold the vows of his devotees always. And Bhishma Deva also tells us this same principle we see, no, in Brahma Samhita. At the time of Bhishma Deva leaving his body, when he makes the Bhishma Stuti prayers, in one of those prayers he says, Swadigamam apahaya mat pratignyam ritam adhikartum avapluto ratastha drita rata charno bhaya chaladur harir ivahantum ivam gato tatriya. Thank you, Mataji. I was forgetting a few words, but you guided me. Thank you. So what does he say? Now that Vishwadev is saying, when he's about to leave his body, and he was also sleeping on the bed of arrows, that Swanigamam apahaya. Krishna is telling Krishna, not because Krishna is present in front of him. He's saying, oh my lord, Swanigamam apahaya. You made a vow before the battlefield of Kurukshetra that you will not fight. And I made a vow that whatever happens, I will make Krishna fight. No? So we know this pastime, we know this vow. So what? No, it's just the sweetness of Bhishmadev that's pouring out here that I just want to share, because I know we know this pastime. So what is Bhishmadev saying? That Swanigamam apaya. You sacrificed your Swanigam, yours. You sacrificed your own vows. But what did you do? Mat pratignya. Pratignya means my vows. That you upheld my vows. And what did you do to uphold my vows? Ritam adhikartum avapluto rathastha. No, you got out of the chariot. Avapluto means get down. You got out, you got down from the chariot, because you were the chariot of Arjuna. Then what did you do? Ritam ratha charno. You know, you took the charno of the ratha, means the wheel of the chariot. You picked up the wheel of the chariot. Ritam ratha charno bhaya chaladur, and you ran towards me. And what kind of mood were you when you ran towards me? Then the last time starts with harir ivahantum ivam gato tatriya. Now harir means lion. Harir ivahantum means elephant. Now hantu means to kill, and ivam means elephant. So just as a lion runs towards the elephant to kill the elephant, you similarly sacrificing your vow not to fight, but to uphold my vow that I will make you fight, got down from the rath, from the chariot, picked up the wheel of the chariot, and ran towards me just as a lion runs towards an elephant to kill him. Why? Just to uphold my vows. Just to uphold my vows. So similar, and then actually there also Bhishmadev sees Krishna as almost like half lion. Because he ran towards me like a lion. So that half line is already there in Krishna. Little bit, what's the word? Inherent, rather than explicit. So it's already there. That's the mood that Vishnudev is seeing Krishna in. The Lord upholds, is Bhakta Vatsala. Tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, that declare boldly, O Arjuna, that my devotees will never perish. So the Lord does that. Now the last point I wanted to make, and I'll stop there, is that this pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and Narasimhadev, actually the beginning, this pastime in Canto 7 of Bhagavatam, it begins from the point that Narad Muni is asked the question, is God partial or not partial? That's the beginning of this pastime. Is God partial or not partial? And then Narad Muni explains this particular pastime to say that the Lord is equal. The Lord is equal. Why? Because the Lord is our Father and we are His children. Therefore, it is natural that the Father is equal to His children. But the God is not only equal, but He is also reciprocal. God is equal and God is reciprocal. Ye yatha maam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamiyam. As you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. So God is equally disposed to everybody, but as we surrender, He reciprocates. As we surrender, He reciprocates. So He is reciprocal. So even when we see this pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu, they actually both get to sit on the lap of the Lord. When Narasimhadev comes, He is equal. Here is divine Prahlad Maharaj, and here is Hiranyakashipu. Both are equal. But the reciprocal is different. You know, with Prahlad Maharaj, he comes across as his, you know, tender, sweet father. It's that loving nature that we expect in a devotional relationship. But Hiranyakashipu sees in his only death. But Krishna also tells us that those who remember me at their point, at the time of death, will attain me without fail. Now, what is Hiranyakashipu looking when he is leaving his body? What is he looking? What is his darshan? The face of Narasimha Devamani. When he is leaving his body, he is looking at the face of Narasimha Devamani. So that's the last thing that he sees before he leaves his body. So therefore, the Lord has to be reciprocal to him in that form as well. But because, you know, Hiranyakashipu doesn't have that loving devotional service, but at least he's seeing the Lord, so the Lord gives him, you know, as we say, as Gopavinda Prabhu was saying, that Narasimha Dev did the first open heart seji in his Narasimha Dev lecture. He was, you know, on morning, he was saying that the Lord did the first open heart seji, and when he opens the heart of Hiranyakashipu and takes the heart out, and then says, actually by now Hiranyakashipu is dead, but he says, you know, to the heart, why have you kept this heart so dirty? I mean, don't you know that I reside in the heart? So at least clean up this heart, at least, you know, because I'm supposed to reside there. Don't make it so dirty. You know? That's what he says, and throws the heart away. You know? And then wears the, you know, garland of the intestine. Why then? You know? That's another thing. So then, the point I was making, that Hiranyakashipu left his body seeing Krishna, you know, or seeing Narasimha Dev, so he also gets liberated. As we said, in this open heart surgery, the operation was successful and the patient was delivered. The operation was successful and the patient got delivered. Patient got delivered back to the impersonal realizations of the Lord, because we know that whomever Krishna heals, he also gets liberated. So you know, the point there was that the Lord is equal. Rather than me saying that the Lord is reciprocal. So, summarizing all that, and I will stop, is that just as that small snowflake I was talking about can gather momentum and become so big, and Prahlad Maharaj demonstrates to us, if we do little, it will become a big devotional service, which is the proper and appropriate use of our free will. If we keep aligning it to Krishna's will, you know, that free will will become, you know, very, very advanced in the devotional mentality, in the divine nature, rather than degrading into the demoniac nature. So how do we do this? If we can just utilize our free will in doing small Krishna consciousness activities, whatever we can, small, then gradually and surely it will gather momentum, you know, and then we'll keep advancing as, you know, gradually we perform more devotional service. So whatever happens, time to time, even if a demoniac mentality comes in, and we actually even end up doing some demoniac activity, that does not mean that we have to stop doing divine activity. Because the more divine activity we do, the lesser demoniac mentality will be in their heart. Because divine and demoniac mentality is a state of mind. It is not that somebody is demoniac by physical appearance only. It is our inherent disposition in the heart. So we have to clean it up, that demoniac mentality. And if we do end up doing something that is not divine, Krishna tells us, because if we are surrendered to Him, yathamam prapadyante, He will reciprocate to us at that particular level. For example, if you are driving on the road and we have told GPS, you know, that I want to go from here to there, and the GPS tells us. But sometimes, you know, we are just so busy, you know, and traffic is rushing everywhere. You know, before COVID-19, you know, everything was so busy. We might have forgotten that actually, but everything was just so busy. Like just so speed, it was just months by months and year by year was flying through, and we didn't even realize that, you know, 20 years has gone into year 2000 only. Now yesterday we were sitting down and looking at the sun that was supposed to rise at the beginning of the sun in year 2000, remember? And there was that Y2K phenomena, that everything electronic will collapse. We have forgotten that, because that seems like last century or something. Your watch will not work, your fridge will not work, your car will not work. We were fooled like that. But everything went. You know? So far we have gone away from year 2000. 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G, Prabhuji, Mataji. Such a speed. You know? So when we are driving on the road, you know, from one point to the other, and GPS tells us do all this, but sometimes we take the wrong turn. Sometimes we take the wrong turn. But the way the GPS is all, you know, it's a Guru Parampara system, yeah, the GPS. So the GPS knows that even if you take the wrong turn, no, it will recalibrate itself and tell you to get back to the route. So Krishna is like that. No? He has choked out a route for us to come, for us to go back to him. And if sometimes we do take the mistake or the wrong turn, which is the demoniac mentality, that's it. Krishna knows from that particular ice core, he is looking at us from the GPS, how to recalibrate our path so that eventually we go back to him. Eventually he will do the reconfiguration. So the point is that small flake will gather momentum. We keep doing our devotional service in a small way, and one day it will become very big. And trust me, it is becoming big, but it's just that we are not realizing. We know that we are changing. Our demoniac mentality is gradually diminishes, and we become more and more divine as we go. Sometimes it's just not visible. Like when we are traveling on the aeroplane. When we are traveling on the aeroplane, then we see there's a cloud out there. But it seems like neither the aeroplane is moving nor the cloud is moving. Both is static. But when the plane lands, then everything is coming at the speed of 100 kilometers per hour. Because by that time the plane is stopped. So like that, our devotional service is progressing, trust me. Now we trust us, or we trust Prabhupada. And then it will intensify. And one day we can master it. Okay. So with that, I'll stop here. Any questions, comments, corrections? Yes, sir. Is there a mic or am I supposed to use that? There's a mic.
This regarding to the free will. In the beginning of the class you mentioned that there are three free wills. So I didn't get it, the third one.
Yeah, it was not three wills. There are three different types of wills, I said, if you want. So one is the Lord's will, whatever the Lord wants to do. The second one is the free will, which is the minute independence he has given us. And the third one, I just coined it by saying evil, E-V-I-L. Mm-hmm. And evil means demonic nature. So free will, when it's aligned with God's will, that is a divine nature. When the free will is not aligned with the Lord's will, that is a demonic nature, and it becomes evil in nature.
Can we say that that can be only the quality of our free will? Because it said the prophet claimed that our free will is just the our opportunity to choose Krishna's or Maya.
Yeah.
So the quality of our free will would be divine or deep or evil.
Well, free will is a choice.
Yeah.
Free will is a choice. We can
the
choose.
Quality of our choice would be divine
or demonic.
Or evil.
Correct.
So, two only.
Well, then it's not two buckets, it's a spectrum. We can be criminals or we can be sages. And it's a big spectrum between a criminal and a sage. From a non-devotee to a devotee. And how much we have misused or used our free will decides where we are on the spectrum. It's a journey. Life is a journey, yeah?
If you allow me to say, the second question is regarding what that means to be too much free will. The explanation that you said for Hiranyakashipu to kill his own son.
Yes.
Because too much free will. What that means, too much free will?
Too much, I didn't say too much free will, I said misuse of free will. Prabhupada says that everything evil in the material world is a perverted reflection of the reality in the spiritual world. So for other words, what's the difference between lust and love? The lust is the divine spiritual nature that's present in the spiritual world, and the perverted reflection of that is lust in the material world. So the source is Krishna only, but the difference between love and lust, love is the proper use of the free will aligned with the Lord's will. Lust is the improper use of the free will which is not aligned with the Lord's will. So it becomes lust. So love and lust, divine and demoniac, is determined by the misuse or use of free will.
It would be placed in the spectrum that you mentioned about the quality of our choice, the demoniac or evil choice.
Yeah.
So the expression of the tendency to kill your own progeny,
yeah,
it means another part of the spectrum of,
yeah,
evil,
yeah, of course, and that's probably the heightened level of
the
evil.
Tendency to Lord Informer of nature.
Correct.
Part expression of that evil choice.
Correct. It's addiction, to bow up, make him completely misuse his free will. To the highest degree, he becomes so demonic in nature. Somebody said that life is BCD. Life is B, C, D. B is for birth. There is no choice. We all take birth. So that's birth. And life is D. D is for death. There is no questions. We were all born. There is no arguments. And we will all die. There is no arguments. So life is B, C, D. So what is C? Choice. So there is no choice of birth. There is no choice of death. But in between there is choices. And because of the choices, you know, we can be divine or we can be demonic. Life is full of choice. No choice of birth, no choice of death. In one sense, because we can decide our next death, depending on our karma, but you know what I mean, yeah? In a metaphorical way. But in between is full of choices. So we can choose Krishna, or we can choose not to be with Krishna.
Another point that you allow me to mention is the beautiful part that you mentioned about Krishna's tendency to uphold his devotees' promise, like the case of Vishnu.
Yeah.
Can we understand the same when Prabhupada, for example, being a pure devotee of Krishna, he expressed that if we are behavior following the four principles and chanting our rounds, Krishna will compensate whatever is lacking. So for us, going back to Godhead, that is Prabhupada's
bhakti.
Yeah. Can we consider that
is
in the same way?
Yeah, definitely we can. But provided we are sincere, yeah. If we are doing it superficially, then you know Bahunam Janam. Not Bahunam Janam. In the morning prayer, you know, we can chant Krishna's name, you know, for many lifetimes. Bahujanya Karyatisarana Kirtanam. So we can chant for many lives, but we may not go back to Krishna. But like Katanga Maharaj, we can go back to Krishna in a nanosecond. Both examples are there, you know. We can chant forever and not go back to Krishna. And we can chant just in a nanosecond and go back to Krishna. And the examples of Ajamilar is also there. There is also there to say the power. People sometimes misuse the pastime of Ajamilar to say, I can be demoniac in all my life. And then just remember Krishna at the end of life and I will go back to Godhead. That pastime is not designed to show it. The purpose of that pastime is to show the power of the holy name. You know, that if we remember Krishna as the end of life, we will go back to Godhead. That's what that pastime is supposed to show. That pastime is not supposed to show that we can be demoniac all our life. Actually, he was a nice Brahmana at the beginning and then he became demoniac. So that is not to encourage us to, you know, do wrong things throughout the life and then hope that at the end of my life, I will name my son as Narayana and go back to Godhead. No, that pastime is to show the power of remembering Krishna at the time of death. Just as the pastime of Katavanga Maharaj is to show the power of, you know, remembering Krishna purely with one utterance, we can go back to Godhead. And in the morning prayers, we say that many lifetimes we can chant Hare Krishna and not go back to Godhead. So all these particular episodes are to bring out the point about the power of the holy name at any particular point in time. So how do we take it? Prabhupada's vows Krishna will definitely uphold, provided we implement it sincerely by chanting 16 rounds sincerely and, you know, by following the four relative principles. So somebody who is just tempted artificially in the sense, you know, not attentively, at the moment the biggest offense to the holy name, 10 offenses we might be okay, but the 11th one, you know, to look at the mobile phone while chanting, that seems to be the biggest problem at the moment, especially during coronavirus. People want to know what's happening. Facebook, WhatsApp, Channel 9, YouTube, you know, while chanting. Prabhupada didn't say, no, watch YouTube and chant 16 rounds. So yeah, your point is true. Krishna will uphold it, provided we do our part. If we can do, there's sometimes, you know, the requirements of bhakti seems very extolling, you know, very lofty. Krishna tells us, you know, that if we can do what we can do, then he will help us do what we can do. If we can do what we can do, sincerely. If we can sincerely do what we can do, then Krishna will help us do what we can't do in the moment. No, that promise is there. Because he tells us that his devotees will never perish. Yeah. Good point. Some points and some questions for the end. Right? So thank you. Anything else? Yes, go.
Krishna's pastime is so wonderful that when he mentioned that Lord Krishna and Bhishma pastime, that regarding breaking his promise, and our acharyas go to the extent of, you know, like he's just churning the rush out of that whole pastime of how Krishna, you know, broke the promise. Yet, at the same time, he did not break the promise. That's also, that view is also there, because Lord Krishna actually did not, I mean, the promise broken was that, okay, Lord Krishna did not promise to break and lift the weapon. But the chariot or the wheel is not considered a weapon. So just, I thought of this comment. That this is, you know, like our acharya is this churn, the make it into a
promise. Prabhupada tells in the Bhagavad Gita Rasamrita that the king is above the law, so he makes the law. So there is nothing such as breaking or following or not following the law, because he is the king. So Krishna is king. Whatever he does is the law. That is, whatever he does is absolute. Although the absolute truth lies in the Mother Astakam. The absolute truth lies. It's an oxymoron. Very beautiful pastime of the Mother Astakam. The person who protects us cries in the Mother Astakam.
The same way
Nisrita, they
used snails to kill the
Akashipur.
Also, no weapons,
but also he used Nakam, with his nails, stripped apart the Akashipur.
I was just wondering from you, you said Brumara's mother was bad?
Yeah. Huh? Stepmother was bad.
Stepmother, yeah. It's kind of proved as a blessing for him anyway.
Yeah, of course. Devotees take everything as a blessing of the Lord. No? We take like the best use out of the bad bargain. He's a stepmother. What I meant to say is that the impetus for his bhakti actually was coming from the bad mother. And Dhrumala saw that. No? He said, this is a blessing. Not Dhrumala. I think his real mother, Suniti. No? Suniti was the real one, right? So Suniti said, you know, that take it as a blessing, because this is not a, no, not a chastisement. Take it as a blessing and continue your Krishna consciousness. And all of them showed, you know, that one flake of snow just ignited and became, you know, Paramahamsas. Okay, should we stop here? Should we stop here? Namo Tassa Bhagavato Vyasaya. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Vyasaya.